The format of this meeting is 2 10-minute speakers followed by our information break, and then our main speaker, who will speak for 30 minutes. Our first 10-minute speaker is MJ.
Hi, my name's MJ. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm nervous. I feel like you have to just say that, right? But I am. I first have some thank yous. So I came to AG in December of 2016, and I was brought to AG by my sponsor, Lisa. So I have a lot of gratitude for Lisa and, you know, her sponsor and the care that network has given me. I also want to thank Stephen for prompting me in a little two-minute conversation before I got up here to sort of trigger that emotional, like, waterfall that I'm right now sitting on. I was talking with Stephen before I got up here about some meditation work that he's been doing that involves sort of breathing and kind of getting inside yourself. And I asked Stephen what it was like when he spoke up here for 10 minutes, and he said that he cried for 9 minutes straight. So, and I come from that same kind of, I could do that too, but I'm not. So thank you also just for people who do service here at AG. It's a huge place. I've been around AA for a long time. There is nothing like this. So, and so I'll give you a little bit of my story. I have two sort of what happens. I came into AA when I was 16. It was August of 1986. I thought I was pregnant. I had no idea what had happened to me the previous night. And in my world, it's always safe to kind of work from the, you know, worst-case scenario and work backwards. So that's where I went, was I absolutely am pregnant. Like, there's no doubt about it. So in the house that I grew up in, Irish Catholic, like, you're dead. Like, your life is over. You cease, as you knew yourself, to exist. Done. Over. So I knew I had to find, like, a new home, a new survival network. And my mom had come into AA when I was 7. So I knew very well about AA. I had been brought to group anniversaries. My mom had hosted anniversaries for people in the home. So I was, I knew about East Rockaway, and it happened to be a Thursday night on August 19th of 86, and so my mom had come home from work, and I was, you know, we were in the kitchen, and I was apologizing to her, and this had happened a lot. In 2 years, I managed to drink as much as I could on Friday and Saturday nights. I was often grounded, but when I could get out, I got out, and there was always a story. I cannot relate to people who come into AA in their 20s or 30s or 40s or 50s and have the experience of drinking and then going to work. That would never happen. That was beyond me. The way that I drank, that wasn't going to happen. But anyway, I was apologizing to my mother because she called me in the morning. She said, "Last night I found you on the backyard lawn at 2:30, and you didn't know how you got there. Do you know how you got there?" No idea. And that happened because of alcohol. There's nothing else. I had no idea, and this is what keeps me sober, I had no idea what happened. And, you know, it's just painful when you think about it that, you know, anyone would sort of so resolutely and so madly take their consciousness away from them, you know? Every person has the freedom to be, you know, have their consciousness, and I took it away. And when I did that, I gave up my right to what happened to me, you know? And that's my alcoholism. Is that when I take the first drink, I surrender my right to what happens to my body. You know, that's how it is for me. So, with that, I was apologizing to my mom, and I could tell that she just did not care. She was like, I do have a sort of exquisitely tormented relationship with my mother, and one of the sort of paramount features of that is that there was never really a close bond. So as I was apologizing to her, I could see that she was like so checked out because she knew the house that I was in. I was in a house with my father, and if I was pregnant, like, you're on your own. So I turned away, and I looked, and I was like, and just people do have those moments. I was lucky enough to have one of those, like, spiritual awakening moments where I turned away and just, you know, I hate to say it like a voice because I don't subscribe to those theories, but there was something inside that said, you have to go to AA, you know? And it was as clear as that. So I turned back to my mom and I said, can you take me to a meeting? And that was it. So I came to the meeting, and since arriving at, you know, the 7:30 beginners meeting in East Rockaway in August of 86, I've never had another drink. Okay, so that's the first part of my story, okay? I'm going to fast forward to what brings me here, okay? So if you do the math, 2016, I was, in that year, I was going to have 30 years. And, you know, 30 years of no drinking. Where I was in December of 2016 is I was at a meeting at another group on a Saturday morning, and I was at that point where I was really scared because AA and I were not on the same page. And I couldn't get on the page because of my sort of mental blocks to resisting treatment in a way, you know? Because I have this situation in which I don't desire a drink, I can kind of merrily go along and create lots of chaos. And when I say that, I am not, trust me, that I am not, there's no understatement there, chaos. So I was at this meeting on a Saturday morning in December, and the person behind me shared, and she shared something that wasn't like Moses, but what she shared just rang to me of like, I get where she's coming from. I get that, you know? And out in the world, when we see alcoholics who are actively drinking, when I see one, I get where they are. I totally get it, you know? So I spoke to this person afterwards, my sponsor now, Lisa, and she said, call me. I called her later that afternoon, and she proceeded to read the big book to me in a way that she was able, for whatever reason, the door opened just enough that afternoon that I was able to hear it. And what I was able to hear with, you know, 29 years of sobriety, so to speak, it's 29 years of not drinking, was that this was a mental illness and that the stuff that I'm dealing with is between my ears. And I know that sounds like, you know, kind of like Gomer Pyle, like whatever, but it really, Lisa was able to explain to me or to get through my head that my problems existed primarily in the operating system. And until I took that operating system apart and unraveled in a way where I said, I came here. You know, I had come to AG before, and I was horrified. You know, and I could give you, like, an outline form, like Roman numeral 1, A, you know, like, what was wrong in terms of that's not how I got sober. Because I had a problem with this sort of mentality, this sort of very kind of strict, well, in December of 2016, I was like, I don't care. Whatever theory I have on AA, it has been proven to be not effective. So I was willing to come in here and just listen, you know, and to just do, because I was desperate. I had the same desperate fear that I'm going to go down. And alcoholism can take me down, for sure. So I stay sober because I want to be able to see what is ahead, you know. And I think that all of us, that's the gift, we all get to have a life that we remember and that we get to touch other people. We're not alone. So I think I'm just going to wrap up with a couple of little thank yous. And if I had to say one thing to the newcomer, whatever it is, honestly, you can get through it if you stay here, and I can testify to that. So with that, thank you.
Our second 10-minute speaker is Chris.
Hi, my name is Chris. I'm an alcoholic. It is great to be here. It is great to see a lot of familiar faces. It was great to hear you, MJ. The wonderful thing about this place is that, you know, I don't know you at all, but I understand you on a deep level. And it's that common peril, common solution element of AA that is just truly profound, and it is something that I have not found anywhere else. My story, what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. First of all, I'll give you my stats. So I got sober August 18th, 2013. This is my home group. I'm on steps 9, 10, 11, 12, and I sponsor other men, and I'm actively engaged with my sponsor on a daily basis. I grew up in Texas. If I would have told you my story early on, I may have said that it was just this, you know, really tragic upbringing that, I was dealt this terrible hand, or my family, you know, treated me badly. But the truth is, I had a wonderful family. I was given tremendous opportunities, and I, despite all of that, despite the fact that I have 26 first cousins, none of which have alcoholism, you know, none of my immediate family has alcoholism, I ended up with this thing. Why? I have no idea. But I didn't really start getting well until I stopped asking why and just started asking, like, what do I have to do? But I struggled with that for a long time. And I started drinking, I think, in fifth grade. The first time I drank, I blacked out. I was with my brother and his friends, and I thought it was the greatest thing ever. And from that point on, I knew that I was going to chase that. There's no questions asked. And that's what I did. And, you know, throughout high school, I was a complete tornado. I got suspended from high school because they found liquor and a shotgun in my car, which, you know, in New York, that's maybe a bigger deal than it was in Texas. But I did get suspended. Luckily, they didn't find all the other things that were in my car. I immediately started suffering serious consequences. I totaled, you know, three cars in one weekend. I totaled another car several weeks later. I didn't total that one, but I did wreck it pretty badly. I blacked out just routinely. In fact, by the time I got to college at UT, which was miraculous that I got in, I went UT Austin. I was purposefully blacking out. Like, it wasn't good enough for me to be just drunk anymore. I drank to black out, and I wanted to black out as soon as possible. So I was doing that, you know, by using other things to help me do that. And, you know, very quickly I started picking up other things. And the reason that I started picking up other things is because I was just too sloppy to be drunk all the time. It was impossible to hide it from everyone. You know, I mean, I reeked of alcohol. And, I do take singleness of purpose in AA very seriously, but just to put it bluntly, you know, my alcoholism led me to a place where I was sticking a needle in my arm 6-7 times a day, and I was completely unable to show up for life. I couldn't even take a shower. I was eating maybe a bowl of cereal every 3 days, and I was 126 pounds. My family had no idea what was going on. They were completely devastated, and they had an intervention. And they came to Austin. They totally tricked me. I was furious. And basically they had two guys. They paid two guys to escort me to Palm Springs, like on both sides of me. And I was in Betty Ford for 6.5 months, and I've never been more miserable in my life. That's when I really understood. You know, I came in here, that was exposed to AA for the first time while I was there, and I came in here knowing for a fact that I was an alcoholic and was addicted to anything and everything, just to the core on a cellular level. I'm addicted to anything. I will take anything to extremes. If it feels good, give me more, you know? And so I came in here knowing that. But what I didn't realize is I thought, like, if I could just get a few days away from this thing, you know, if I could just put a few days together, which I never had, then I could, you know, kind of reassemble my life and remanage things. But it was during that 6-month period where I did not have access to, you know, to alcohol, that I realized that this problem centers in my mind. I was absolutely crazy. I wanted to kill myself. I was completely miserable. And as soon as I got out, I drank. I moved up here. I was lying to everyone saying I was sober. I followed a girl into this group. She and I are now engaged. But that's, yeah, for the newcomers in this room, it's maybe not the most recommended path. But anyway, so... But I ended up here, and I actually spoke at this meeting. I got a year. I spoke at this meeting. You know, I thought I looked good, thought I sounded good, but within several days, you know, I drank. And my alcoholism manifests itself in severe dishonesty. And until I was able to sit across from another man and get completely honest, and not just, you know, during a fifth step, not just during a first step, but on a daily basis. You know, I don't do this perfectly, but until I was able to do that, I just could not get well. And I was dying on the vine. I'm literally standing, I mean, think about how crazy that is. I was standing here with 600 people willing to help me, and I was unable to ask for help. That is how self-centered I am. You know, that is how dishonest I am. Like, it matters more to me that I looked okay to y'all than it did, you know, and I would die for that, than it did for me to ask for help. And every time that I got sober, you know, it's because I got caught. But thank God that this last time I was completely willing. I had no other option. I thought, absolutely, this would not work. I was 100% convinced this wouldn't work, but I had no other option, and I did it anyway. And I just started taking all the suggestions that were asked. I had more than 7 commitments at all 7 of the meetings here, and I just dove in headfirst and dove into the steps. I, you know, it's very simple. You know, I trust God, clean house, help others is the most simple way I've heard this put. I did the steps with my sponsor exactly as they're outlined. And, you know, I continue to take those simple actions on a daily basis to the best of my ability. You know, in the morning, I pray and I meditate. I try to speak to at least 3 other guys a day. I'm actively involved in sponsorship at all times. That keeps me honest because I cannot be telling these guys to do something that I'm not doing. And I speak to my sponsor every day. And rarely do I ever call him late, and rarely do I ever not take his suggestions. You know, I really take it very seriously. And as a result, my life has completely transformed. I cannot tell you the magic of this place, of AA and these steps. It is just totally profound. I really can't believe what has happened in my life in the last 4.5 years. And I'm not talking about materially or anything like that, just emotionally. The fact that I can wake up and the first thing I do is not turn to a bottle of booze or, you know, needle before I could even get out of bed, it's mind-blowing. The fact that I can, you know, take care of myself and show up for work on time and be a valuable member of society, and try to be helpful to other people is just, it's the greatest gift. And, you know, it's frankly, it's also my greatest asset because it's put everything in perspective for me. And I have found greater joy in helping other people and, you know, through altruism, which is really what the solution to alcoholism is. It is altruism. Just unselfishly concerned with the welfare of other people. The more I'm involved in that and less in managing my own life and my own desires and my own wants, like the more just life unfolds for me. It is this odd paradox of AA. I can't explain it, but it is, you know, the central fact of my life. So I thank you so much for everyone in this room, and yeah, look forward to hearing Deneen.
Main speaker tonight is Deneen.
My name is Deneen, and I'm a grateful alcoholic. Oh, my goodness, I had surgery on both legs, so forgive me with a little squinching of the face, but I'm strong, I make it. If I wanted a drink or something else, I bet you with its cast on my legs, I would still go and get it. The difference is now I have the sobriety and strength in my life, so I'm very grateful for all of you. I want to say a prayer. Oh, you don't hear me? This big mouth? Okay. All right. I need to say a prayer first. And dear God, breathe. Dear God, I give you these moments. I share these moments. Please take away my despair of yesterday. Help me to forgive the pain. Forgive the things that cause me pain and would keep me bound. Help me begin again. Please bless every person and situation I will encounter. Make me be who you would have me be, that I might do as you would have me do. Renew my soul and free my spirit. I surrender to you the day ahead. Thank you, God, for this day. Please help me to accept myself, love myself. As you accept me, love me. I am enough. I have enough. I do enough. Amen. Okay. My stats are January 8th. You can't hear me yet, my man? What do you saw? All right. No. Oh, yes? Oh, okay. All right, my loving family. All right. Okay, my sobriety date is January 8th, 2008. I just made 10 years last month. Thank you. Thank you all. Thank you. And it is a true honor to be here. I'm working on the second step again with my sponsor, Linda, which I'm grateful to have, and my grand sponsor, Ava. You know, I treasure so many of you in my heart. You know, so many of you have guided me through my darkness and the storm in my heart. I want to thank Joan and JD and Kristen and so many others, Bonnie and others, that warmed my heart. Even though they wanted me to say, shut up and keep his mouth quiet and stop talking about Jamaica and rum. You know? I'd also love to say I am so grateful for my sponsees. Very grateful for them. They've hunted me down at the beginnings of my, you know, in my early stages is looking for sponsees, and I'm so honored that they're in my life today, and my beautiful grand sponsees. And what I say about everyone in this room is every one of you are platinum jewels to me, because we want better for our lives. We don't, you know, I have to speak for me, but to me, you're the precious jewels, because you inspired me when I thought I couldn't do any better, you know. My first drink was when I was 17, my parents were very loving. We were in Jamaica. As some many of you know, I was not born on land or sea. I was born in an airplane. So, you know, it's kind of weird to say, yes, I'm Jamaican, but it was leaving Jamaica when I was born in the air. So, you know, but, you know, they weren't going to turn the plane around to say, oh, the lady's having a baby, her and her husband. So turn back. So it was over the sea I was born. I was always embarrassed. I remember Peggy would share, I miss her. Would always share that, just tell the truth, just say so. So Peggy is one of the ladies that when I came to this meeting, we were upstairs at the time. And I remember Amy brought me, and I was coming to the meeting, and she was the one that said, I'm in love with the Atlantic group. And I never forget it, because she said it with such feeling. It wasn't like a joke. She meant it from her heart, and that inspired me. I said, let me see what this little fashion model lady is talking about. You know? And I'm so grateful that I stayed. You know, I've heard horrid stories about the Atlantic Group. And if anybody here talks about the Atlantic Group, I'm going to take my pocketbook up and chase them out the building. Because I love the Atlantic Group. If the people here have saved me, my sponsors. You know, I've had sponsors here, and we're all still close. We still go out to dinner. We have the beauty of sharing lives, and we encourage each other. So I'm very grateful. As I said, my first drink was at 17. We were traveling. We had chaperones when we were growing up. My parents were so loving. We used to run by the sea in Jamaica. She would give us her head tilt, and we were in church, give us the head tilt, and take us out to church, and we would run by the sea. And my mother and father would chase us and tickle us. And, you know, we had a lot of Jamaican folklore stories and songs sang to us when I was growing up. So I remember those endearing moments. I remember, you know, also when my mother baked something for someone. And I was little thing here, so. And I remember looking up and seeing somebody was pregnant. She baked the cake. Somebody moved in. Somebody, whatever happened. And I still keep that endearing moment to this day because I didn't see any money pass. But I saw, looking up at both of them, the smile. I saw the beauty of, hello, Mr. Johnson, your suit look nice. Or hello, your hat, I love your hat, darling, or your clothes. I still keep that today. But when I decided to crash into that palm tree after sneaking a drink that was prepared for the chaperone, Miss Whitfield, she went to get ice, and I said, ooh, let me try this here, sir. And I took the drink, and I got a hot rush. And then I went downstairs, got on my moped, and crashed into a palm tree. That is what happened, that was my first drink. Of course, I got into trouble. You know, which the trouble was a beating, you know, that's the trouble we got. So I didn't want no alcohol until I was in my 20s, thank God. So, you know, but that turned me to the point of, that was my beginning of being sneaky, you know. We were raised very strictly. When my parents died at a young age, you know, it was hard for me. I have a brother and sister, and my heart hurts still thinking about it. But, you know, when I got the lashing and then I didn't have any drink until I was in my 20s. That time we were drinking, it was the 50s, so I'm kind of an ancient dinosaur, so bear with me. You know, so the drinking, we went to parties. We danced. We looked nice. We didn't take a drink and sit on the floor or on the chair and look at each other with the hat on. You know, we had a good time. It was beautiful and jovial at first, you know, and then it got a little worse. At that time, before it got worse, my husband and I, my ex-husband, and now, we raised 14 boys, which I'm very grateful to say they're on their own, and they're not in my hair, thank God. But I'm proud of them because I used to chase them with an iron cast frying pan. So I'm grateful. So at that time, when we were raising the boys, as they were leaving, you know, then we would come from Pleasantville, New York, where we lived, and come down, drive down to our home here in Washington Heights. At that time, Washington Heights was Greek, Jewish, Italian, a Jamaican, and American Indian. It's strange when I think of my past. We grew up in a cul-de-sac area in Washington Heights. And 10 houses on one, 10 on the other. And everyone was from a different part of the world. When I think of that now, I say, how did that man arrange that? And each one of us had, each of my family had a brownstone. So Miss Levy had a brownstone, Miss Rainford, American Indian, and the O'Neills and whatnot, you know. So we all grew up with not a barrier of prejudice or any worry of that. The only time I had problem is when I went to school, which I still hold that. Sometimes I would drink over that. The students accepted me, but my first teachers were Polish, Japanese, and what was the main one? German. So you could imagine, oh my God, what I went through. But the good part was, when I went home and asked why they didn't like me, my grandmother said, I didn't send you to school to worry about being teacher's pet. I sent you to school to get your education, learn for them, and go to the next level. So the beautiful thing was, even though I was ridiculed sometimes at school, I was sent home with love and surrounding loves and kisses and great stories and laughter. That's why I still love to laugh with all of you so much, you know. So hold on to your girdles because I might get a little crazy soon. I'm grateful for those experiences. I'm grateful to know that there are all types of people in the world. And I'm grateful to be a part of them and have my unique design, as each one of us does. Let me see, we raised the boys. The next thing was I went to school for landscaping and horticulture. I did 2 years of that, so I was doing gardening for people's homes in Staten Island. And after I did their acres, they would say, come, Miss Stewart, here's your pay, take a drink. Me, phony. Oh, no, I don't drink. I don't want anything. I don't drink, no thank you. And I was breaking my neck home to my cases of Jamaican rum. You know, it's very phony then, you know. Then. I'm not phony now. I want to get it right, yes, which I'm grateful for. So grateful. Also, my next journey with that was, I have to go real quick. When I came into the Atlantic Group, I was asked to do a qualification at 23rd Street. I forgot the avenue over there, the other Atlantic Group place. And when I was started to come in, my teeth were getting loose. So I had to have them removed. They asked me to speak 3 weeks before. So I said, oh, good, my teeth will be ready for Christmas. I'll be looking cute and all kind of thing. Well, honey, the teeth weren't ready, and Amy G. made me get up and still qualify. Excuse me for that look there. I already got the okay from Amy. I said, Amy, I'm going to say I had a resentment to you because you made me get up there and qualify with no teeth, you know. And the good part was the next day it was ready, but big deal, you know. But the beautiful thing about that was when I was a nervous wreck, which I get nervous. I have panic attacks, but I was in a lot of pain, and so I had to get up, and I love the embracement of all of you here. Noah, he was at that meeting, and I was a nervous, looking like something happened to me. And he took me in the corner, and he said, come to me, and let's pray together. And he said, you're not doing it for you. You're doing it for the newcomer or to help anyone that's in the room. And that was the only way, by being resentment at my dear Amy, my old sponsor, to step up there and just share from my heart. So I was very grateful for that, very, very grateful. And Noah called me this afternoon, too, as he always does if I have to speak somewhere, and he prays with me. You know, I've had quite a few people here, Joan and Donna and others, pray with me. And Felicia, and it's made such a difference. So I don't start my prayers without it. So after that, with the landscaping, I always believed I wanted to have my own business. So I decided to make Jamaican rum cakes. Now that is a story there. So I was making Jamaican rum cakes, as I usually do, as gifts. One lady said to me, she said, oh my, these are wonderful. She said, how much are they, $50? And I said, oh yes, they're $50. So what happened was, because of word of mouth, in the church, in the hospitals, I had 500 orders a month. And on Valentine's Day was 800 orders of a heart-shaped Jamaican rum cake. Now, our Jamaican rum cakes are made 2 years, you know, the combination, the ingredients take 2 years. So it's not like I see some of these restaurants, they pour it on and light it and say, that's a Jamaican rum cake. No, that's not. That's a whole process. So when you take a teaspoon, you get dizzy. So, you know, I had to have families sign a clause where if their child takes some, I'm not responsible. For true, I really did, you know. They can't blame me. But so what happened? The business went so well. It was very lucrative. The only difference is I didn't know the difference. I didn't have the technology of today. You know, you could get somebody to help you, and I had people at church making it and a few friends delivering for me, but I didn't know how you could do the business by itself now. So the thing is, it became overwhelming. I couldn't handle it. All these orders, and people want 20 orders and 100 orders, and they want it in 2 days. And thank you, darling. So it got so bad that I started to isolate and drink. I stopped paying people. I stopped answering the phone. I was in darkness, you know, and my family flew here. My family had called and said, how is everything? I said, everything is fine. And lying. I'd say, oh, everything, no problem, send the liquor. And I told them I had a year anniversary. And eight of my family members flew here from Jamaica to surprise Deneen, to surprise me. And they came with such hopes of trusting and believing that I was doing my business and not using it. They came to the door. I didn't want to answer. I opened the door and see eight of my loved ones with suitcases and gifts to give me. And they said they found out that I was lying. And they said even my husband went to, all ex-husband. Well, husband. And they said, Deneen, you lied to us again, and we trusted you. And they dropped their gifts, and they flew back that same day back to Jamaica, and they disowned me from that time. And it was the best day of my life because I had to decide whether I wanted to kill myself, hurt my loved ones anymore, or wind up in a casket. And that's when I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. My husband used to bring me to Alcoholics Anonymous, take me to conventions. And I said, what the hell is this? Everybody's laughing, kee-kee-kee. What is this nonsense? Yet everybody's so bright and, you know, fluttery. And I couldn't understand it. As a newcomer coming in, I said, what is this? Why is everyone happy? But I also noticed that people that cared for me told me, Deneen, shut up and listen. And I noticed when they said it to me, it wasn't to insult me. It was a kind of care. It was a positive criticism, which I take till this day. I'm not insecure if someone tells me something that will help me or I can help others. So, you know, I have made amends to my family. They, you know, thank God. I'm just so grateful to trudge the road to happy destiny. You know. So one of the things with the Jamaican rum. I had stopped. I was going to 12th Street at the time. And my family, my son was getting married, and my family sent 75 cases of Jamaican rum, overproof Jamaican rum, to my home. And the UPS came and unloaded it, and I ran to the meeting. I said, they were talking, help me. I have 75 cases of Jamaican rum in my house. Help me. I'll never forget it. And five ladies in that meeting immediately came to my house. They called a U-Haul van. They took it in storage in the Bronx. And my son said, don't bring it, Mama. I'm getting married. I don't want no rum. I don't want no alcohol at my wedding. So the storage place bought 75 cases of Jamaican rum. And I gave the money to my son for his wedding anniversary. A blessing for his wedding. So that was something. So the last part to that was they sent for Thanksgiving. a time later, they sent three cases, because everybody didn't believe I was sober. So they sent three cases of Jamaican rum, and the UPS man came with the gurney and the liquor, and he said, sign for it. I signed for it. And this was after everything. They saved me. And then I said, okay, happy Thanksgiving. He looked at me like, is this woman mad? And I'll never forget his face. I signed in and I said, have a good Thanksgiving. He looked at me. And as he was going down the road with the thing to put on, he's looking at me like she's going to call me back any minute. She's just playing with me. But that was the closing end of that. So I don't do any Jamaican rum cakes. Of course, I would love to, but, you know, the money was great, you know, but so be it. I can't. I cannot. I can't be around that. So, you know, I'm very grateful. Now, coming into the rooms, I saw the beauty of people coming and sharing from their heart, which shocked me, because I was taught to keep your mouth shut. You don't share your business. And I came, and people got up here and shared. And I said, what? She told that? I wouldn't tell nobody my business. But it helped me to know, in order to grow, you have to let go and open yourself to others. Otherwise, I'm going to be stuck. And as my beautiful sponsor, Wilma, says, if it doesn't challenge you, it doesn't change you. And that is such a true point. I believe in that wholeheartedly. You know, coming into the rooms, doing the steps, I'm still connected with my sponsors, my sober sisters, you know, and dear friends here who have helped me. You know, I've asked for advice. I'm not sure. I feel lost. What can I do now? You know? And they took time to stop and help me. This is what I love about the Atlantic Group. We take time to help each other and inspire each other. You know, even though we're cackling all over the place, we still take a moment to say something inspiring or something to help the person or refer them to someone who can help them. So that is a great inspiration for me. You know, it's been very hard. I've been extremely ill. I have two casts on my leg now because I had a situation. My vein exploded and whatnot. So, but I'm grateful because even though I'm in severe pain now, if I needed a drink or something else, I bet you I'd climb Mount Everest to go and get it. So I changed that mindset of knowing that I'm doing the right thing by coming. I can always lay down and, oh my goodness, oh Jesus, help me. You know, which is not really, I'm not a whiner because I've noticed whining doesn't do any good. I will share my pain with others, you know, and let it go, you know. Another thing I have to share with you is when I was running out of liquor and liquor was no more in my life, I had to do sneaky things. So I love Jackie Gleason. Jackie Gleason is the one that taught me to be a pool shark. So I used to go, no, that was before. That was before, yes, because I was drinking that. It was before. But Jackie Gleason, I admired his pool shooting. So I would go to the Blarney Stone, all these Blarney Stones here in New York, and I would say, oh, I don't know how to play this game. Let me put down $20 and you show me and make all kind of mistakes. And then put more money down, and then slaughter everybody in the place for their money. You know, so I don't shoot pool anymore. I don't go near there because it gives me a like a trigger. You would say a trigger. Yes, so I don't do that. You know, so you know I've been no angel. I don't pretend to be a saint. I just know that I speak from the heart when I share my heart with all of you. And Ron, you've been a great inspiration to me, too. I remember with Ron, he used to always try and force me to go to a meeting. Come on, go sign up. Go sign up here. Come on, we're going up here. And it meant a lot. I'm whining about it, Ron, but it meant a lot that you did take time to push me, always push me to go to meetings. And I was always an isolator. You know, my drinking led to me isolating. I didn't want to hurt any more people. I hurt my loved ones. I have made amends to those people that I hadn't paid for doing my work in my business, in the Jamaican rum cake business. You know, I'm very grateful for that. You know, my purpose now is to inspire others. You know, when I'm not in severe pain, I still go by the bedside of hospice patients, which I was trained for years ago. And I help them. If I can give somebody a second of peace with the pain that people suffer, that's my purpose, you know? And also, my other purpose was is to baptize children or marry couples. So it's funny, a woman crashing into palm trees and acting like a nincompoop has turned into somebody that can help others. You know, I'm very grateful to that. You know, my heart is just so elated of thanking God. Every day I talk to God. I go to the window, pull the blinds up, and sometimes those birds are chirping, and I say, hush up, don't you know I'm talking to God? Close your mouth. And somebody in a meeting said to me, leave them alone. They're praying with you. And from that time, I stopped. That's what I love. You can say things to somebody, and they'll say something, and it fits right in to the prayer or meditation that you're doing. You know, and sometimes I'll talk to God and I say, God, you know, many people have really took time to support me with my service dog, and I'm having the hardest time to get him. They look at me and they see, oh, she's fine. Oh, no, child, I have, you know, I have severe debilitating pain. And the only reason, it's not for pity, because, you know, I'm not one for pity. That doesn't work for me. It don't help anyway. If it could ease the pain, maybe I would say it, but no. You know, the only thing is what bothers me is sometimes when you ask for help, it's in God's time. It's not in my time. Oh, good. So I'm just very grateful. I'm just worried a little that sometimes when I go out without a dog that I'm praying for, and all of you have helped support, and I thank you deeply, that I get frozen in the middle of the street, and it's hard for me to cross without calling somebody back to help me, pull me across before the cabs come. So this lady said to me after she pulled me back across, she said, she tapped my hand and she said, Miss, this is not the way to commit suicide. I said, no, lady, that's not what it is. That's the last thing I want to do. You know, I've been through trials and tribulations, but so many of you have held me together. You know, so many people I hug, and I hug them with love. There's another lady in here, young lady in here, Emily, that was at the Wednesday meeting. Monday night meditation. And she also, she's another one that kept me. Many of you kept me in the meeting. But she kept me in the meeting because she opened her mouth and she said, well, I don't want to be here. And I don't like it. And I don't think this is it. And I loved her for that. Because she told how she felt. She didn't sugarcoat it with, you know. She said what she needed to say. And this is what I love about the Atlantic Group. We speak from the heart. You know, I'm truly honored and grateful. Prayer and meditation. My sponsor, she enlightens me. You know, even though in my worst, awfulest, debilitating moments, I will still do something positive for that day. I'm not one to talk against my people or anyone. When I've learned, page 562, there's a gentleman that lives above me. He's a veteran, and he's shell shocked. He can't stand water. So he drives a chair from 1 in the morning till 6. It used to really get to me. But I read page 552, the resentment prayer. And I have to want the best for others in order to get the best for me. So they said do it for 2 weeks in the book, but 2 weeks is not enough for this one here. Yeah. So I keep doing it, you know. I keep praying. If I have somebody that hurts me or something, I'll pull them to the side and I'll say, listen, you hurt me. I show you respect. Don't talk to me that way. I don't have nowhere. I go home and, why did you say that to me? I should have straightened her out. I don't have that. I don't want that because it takes away the growth I've had coming into Alcoholics Anonymous and being a part of the Atlantic Group. You know, I used to watch sci-fi movies, you know, and like Criminal Minds and all that. And I said, wait a minute. You're going for a better life, and you're going home watching people get beat up and slaughtered? What kind of mindset is this? So, no. I really, all of a sudden, it just hit me. And I said, no, you watch something else. So I'm not about the romance, because I was married. That's enough romance for me. So, but I see things where people struggle. I know y'all don't like, y'all young people don't watch Little House on the Prairie. But the thing is, I love the idea of the struggle. They struggled, but they stayed together no matter what it was. They kept going, and then things worked out. You know, and in life today, we all struggle and go through our changes. I go through it. But I'm not going to let it hold me back. I'm not going to let it hold me back. Put that minute up, girl. You know, I'm not going to let it hold me back because there's so much of life to see the trees and the birds and happy smiles and get hugs and inspire each other when we're down. and to build each other up. What more can you ask for? And to have family that trusts you now and allow you to come into their home, you know, and love you now and forgive you. I have great forgiveness, and I have true friends today. What a joy to have true friends, to know that I don't have to talk against them, and I refuse to let my sponsees, grand sponsees, or anybody talk against anyone, because it doesn't work for me. If you want to talk against somebody, go on that side of the road. I don't want that, because I want to grow. I don't want to be perfect. I don't want to be special. I know I'm part of God's. God gave me a new chance at life to make these 10 years. And if it wasn't because of all of you and God holding me close and people encouraging me, I wouldn't be here now. Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you.